Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
This week's episode of the Guitar Nerds podcast is brought to you by Gunn Street Wiring, a micro-instrument electronics company obsessed with overall quality. That's right, they're a new approach to the guitar wiring market. Because, of course, when it comes to music, there is endless variety. But when it comes to your instruments wiring, your manufacturer generally gives you one type. However, Gunn Street Wiring put forth a shiny alternative by creating a massive range of different wiring harnesses suitable for every single musical style. They have a beautiful website where you can navigate around selecting your instrument shape, then choosing between 50s modern and hybrid wiring harnesses, and within that, every single different type of harness you can possibly imagine. It's an affordable mod, and if you go with Gunn Street Wiring, it's a mod you simply won't regret. Check them out, gunstreetwiringshop.com. Hello and welcome to the 197th episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast, the world's number one guitar podcast. I am your host, Joe Branton, joined this week by Jay Cross.
Hi, Joe.
Matt Knight.
Hello there.
And Mark Packham.
Blinded by the light.
That's right, listeners. And this marks our last regular.
Marks.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
hello.
Mark's, yes.
It's all
yes.
Of ours.
Mark's
good,
last ever
it?
Podcast.
Yeah, it's my last ever podcast. Again, never doing it again.
This is the last regular episode of the Guitar Nerds Podcast for this year, I believe. That is right, isn't it?
We don't yeah, know yeah, it is the last.
Because after this next week, listener, you get to look forward to a whopping, I don't know how many, it was six episodes?
Five episodes. It's always five. Always
five
the same.
Episodes, approximately 7 hours of
so not as much as last
year. Gear of the Year.
Guitar
2018.
Of the year.
That's right. My goodness.
And you get to look forward to that, and we get to look forward to three weeks off.
Yeah.
but
I
yes.
can't believe it. What do people do on Mondays normally?
I mean, I have a great time. I just like realize that you guys are all here slaving away, and I'm like, I don't have to be there anymore. It's great.
This is like three in a row you've been here.
I know.
For.
Terrible. And all day on Saturday. Rubbish.
Yeah.
I am looking forward to not the sort of the late night editing. Patreon backers will know how late night my editing is because the Patreon episodes go up as I finish editing them, which is normally around like 1 a.m.
Well, it's a good job you had a nice early night and long night's sleep last night then, ready and prepared to do lots of nice work.
Yes, that's right, listener. For the last podcast of this year, I haven't been to bed. I haven't even been home. I'm wearing last night's clothes still.
You're in prime Branton condition,
yes,
basically.
Yes, that's right.
This is like very GAC Branton.
I went out, stayed
GAC
for...
to the future.
GAC podcast.
Stayed for a lock-in at the place I went to and then went from there to work when it was...
Remember when we used to like actually drink while we were doing the podcast? Like properly drink?
Yeah, I mean, I would still if I didn't have to like occasionally give you a lift home.
Yeah,
but yeah, when we did the GAC podcast, I mean, also we were drinking in GAC
and we were like living in town and stuff, so none of us had to drive anywhere and that.
I mean, I'm still the only one who can drive, so
sure,
I'm the only one who has to drive anywhere.
I love the fact that I don't drive, and I'm like, I don't know many people who don't drive, and the people that I know that don't are the three other people I podcast.
Yeah, it's weird this long-running podcast of man babies, a higher percentage than normal, doesn't drive.
Listen, don't drag me into this. I learned this valuable life skill at an age when you're supposed to.
Yeah, I live somewhere where you can get the train, so I am the sticks.
I like the planet, so
I'm all about the fuel, mate. I'm all about saving the world. Love it.
I think the last...
Nuke the whales.
I think 2007...
That's Matt's catchphrase this year. It's become nuke the whales.
I think last year's... I think 2017's Gear of the Year
podcast. Oh, Joe's talking about the podcast again.
I think we were drunk for those towards the end.
Where did we... Did we do it here?
Yeah, we did it here.
We did. And we were drunk.
Were we? Mm. Okay. I feel like maybe we've just, you know...
Which 2017, we had a relatively solid...
I think I've learned that nobody pays me back for the beers that I buy, so I've just stopped doing it.
That makes sense.
Mm-hmm. In love, payback in love and that.
I'd rather
warm feelings.
We let you get your weigh-in gear of the year. That's how it works.
Oh, he really did as well. Oh, listener, you're in for a tragedy.
The Fender chopping board one gear of the year
became gear of the year.
Chopping board's been a staple of the catalogue for a number of years. So didn't qualify.
Defender 2018 calendar won Gear of the Year 2018.
I mean, it would have been the best thing Fender put out this year. So.
Spoilers for Gear of the Year.
Listen. You just wait.
Just wait
until we stop recording and I punch you in the face.
But yes, it was. I think you're in for a treat, an oral treat, listener, because
our rule.
What do I say? Because it is an excellent podcast, the Gear of the Year. Some unexpected things.
I'm looking forward to the feedback more than ever this year.
There are some real heated moments. Retrospectively, when I was listening back and editing the podcast, I realised that we were quite aggressive at times.
Good.
There were some.
And we only picked the coolest looking products. If it didn't look cool,
out the window.
Out the window.
In fact, even if it was a great product. That's
not
cool. Too boring.
Yeah. you're hosting this. Why are you looking at me?
You started saying something.
I said
Oh, okay, fine. Well, anyway. We're not going to give you any hints about what is happening on Gear of the Year, other than obviously there were some excellent things. And I think the listeners' poll also played an interesting and major role.
More than ever.
First time we've ever had like a really strong listener poll, I think.
Yeah, normally they just pick a load of old tat.
Yeah, exactly. But
do you think that means that we've got more informed listeners, or they're just now paying more attention to things that we like?
Maybe we've brainwashed them to
finally the trendsetters that we claim.
That subliminal messaging that you backwards record into the podcast every week.
What about that?
Smoke.
Mark Packham, this week you've been trying out more effects pedals.
I have.
In particular, a brand that I don't think we've discussed on the podcast before. Zeppelin.
Yes.
Effects. Is it just Zeppelin effects?
Zeppelin Design Labs.
Yeah, Zeppelin Design Labs.
Zeppelin Design Labs Quaverato, which is a amp-style tremolo in a box, two-button pedal. It's tap and on and off. It is really, really good. In terms of like trems, I'm almost tempted to say it's better than the trem in the Strymon that I've got in the Flint.
Really?
Crikey.
There's quite a lot of trem choices. It had all the various waveforms.
Yeah, so you got control-wise on there, there's waveform, there is depth, there is rate, obviously, but there's also a thing called spacing, which basically means, from what I can, because I haven't looked at the manual, of course I haven't, if you select a harsher waveform, like a square wave, the spacing seems to kind of like spread out the kind of edges of the wave almost. Right. So it goes from being like really choppy to being not smoother, but they're less punctuated.
Right.
So it's got that, and obviously you've got like a mix control. There's also a...
Oh, that's handy on a trem.
Is it a mix control? No, in fact, it's not a mix control. It's just a level.
Right.
So it... Yeah.
So the spacing is kind of a mix, I guess.
Not really. No. No. That isn't what spacing does.
Okay.
What I also like on it, it's got a latching or non-latching mode, so you can just turn it on and off like a foot switch.
I love
or
that
you can
idea.
Switch it and it becomes a momentary trem.
That's so great.
Is there a, with the momentary control, does it sort of ramp up or ramp down?
No. So,
so
not,
it's just...
Oh,
so
that
just,
would be cool. I'd well, love a bit of ramping on a trem.
Okay. So they had that on the... TC, we talked about this very briefly the other day. The Viscous Vibe.
Yeah,
not the
Viscous Vibe.
No, it wasn't the Viscous Vibe. It was the...
What was the trem, Matty?
The Pipeline.
No, not that one either. The one, the orange one that was...
The Shaker Vibrato.
The Shaker, the Shaker Vibrato. Which, okay, fair enough, isn't the trem, but, you know, by
sure. I have a tone print for that one.
Oh, do you?
Yeah,
it's the worst one.
What they did was they put like a momentary rise time on it.
Yeah,
when
yeah,
they
that
copied
was
the
what
Boss
I...
VB2. They were like, "Oh, we make sure we put that wicked feature on it," and I was like, "Yeah, you do that."
Okay,
we're still the best.
Did you? Is that feature on the VB2?
Yeah, it's got rise time control.
So back to the Quaver.
But it's not. You can't. It's not momentary, is it?
It is.
You can set it as momentary.
Oh, you can?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So back to the Quaverato. I really like it. Sounds great. It sounds very much like an amp trem. Build-wise is really good. As far as I remember, they're not much money. Has someone got it up in front of them there?
Excuse me? So it can be quite a lot of money, actually. It can go up to... So the on the page, it says between $19 and $238.
Okay.
Now, I'm not sure what it is that costs $19 on here, but one of the things that's really interesting is, as well as being able to buy the pedal, you can also buy a kit to build the pedal yourself, which I think seems like a very, very interesting little option to have there. And also, you know, save yourself some time.
That's cool. So what do you get
in terms of, like, I'm talking about, you know, the people behind Zeppelin Design Labs?
Yeah, I guess so.
Imagine getting to a point where you can say, you can buy this, or how about this, just build it yourself so I don't have to.
So pricing, if you choose to get the kit, it's $89. If you choose to get the ready-to-play option, it's $189. But this could be a cool little project because the end result is really, really good. There is also...
That's very reasonable.
Yeah, there is also... The reason that it can go up to $238 is that you can also get a MIDI mod built in, which I assume adds MIDI function. Optional MIDI implementation gives remote control over every feature. So everything in it can be controlled
via
MIDI. Basically... If you were thinking of a nice little project for Christmas, I'd highly recommend the Quaverato Tremolo in kit form. That'd be great. I'm just looking at it now. You basically get the box, you get the circuit board, you get all the pots, you get the switches, everything that you would need.
What do you get for the design on the front, though? Do they give you a sticker?
They give you an overlay. So it's like it's not even a... like a transfer or anything. It's like a plastic overlay that I assume has got some adhesive on it, and that sticks on the front of the pedal. Mm-hmm. So you're basically building exactly what you get when you get the pre-built one,
cool.
But it's in kit form, and you save yourself $100.
It sounded absolutely fantastic when you brought it over to plug in. It sounded so, so good.
Yeah. Worth mentioning, there's in-phase and out-of-phase tremolo modes. There is... extra internal controls, which I didn't know about. Extra internal controls allow for custom crossover frequency selection and individual high and low signal path volume adjustment, which is good because actually, at the moment, where it must be set, I turn it on, I think it's a bit bassy sounding, and it kind of colours the low end of my amp a little bit. So it sounds like you can dial that back, which would
that
be awesome.
Is awesome.
Yeah, totally love it. Just real cool pedal, great sounds. And I think at $89, if you want to build it yourself, absolute bargain.
Most of their other products are named after coffee things.
It's a cool... I mean, the whole thing, like the branding on the company is amazing.
It's quite steampunk, isn't it?
It's got kind of... No, it's just a retro vibe.
I think it's a bit steampunky, but that, you know...
What are the other things in the
range? So the other things, they've got the Altura MIDI Theremin. Yeah.
Oh!
Yes. The Macchiato Mini Synth. Which looks like a, what's the Korg thing with the...
The Volto? Volca?
No, no,
Volca?
No, no. The the thing with the stylus that goes like... Boo!
So...
A stylophone.
Yeah.
I've got one. It's like the little delay thing.
Yeah.
It's not got a stylophone, but you just run your finger on it.
But that's what this is, though, isn't it? Isn't it a stylophone? I think they've just made
just
their
says
own stylophone.
Mini synth digital synthesizer. There's also the Cortado balanced contact mic. The
Cortado
espresso,
is also a coffee.
Mm-hmm, the espresso phantom power supply. Espresso, I don't know what that is. The percolator 2-watt tube amp. Speaker cabinet.
This company's incredibly cool, and I didn't actually realize. So this Theremin MIDI controller... Is that it? Basically, doesn't come with any sounds built in, but it is just the theremin part, like the controller part of a theremin.
So it's an expression pedal, basically.
Yeah,
and
then you
it's
then
a MIDI
connect
expression
it up.
Pedal.
Yeah, yeah. But you're just kind of like waving your hands in the air rather than
like you
just don't care.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Like the Alesis Air Effects.
Oh, let's talk about the Air Effects, Matty, because I just sent you a link to one.
I know. £100 is way too expensive.
No, it isn't. You should buy it. £100. Do you want to tell people what that is?
The Alesis Air Effects was like... Let me see if I can... I wonder if I can find the actual web description. It was basically a... It was an effects pedal built for DJs in about 1998, I guess. And it was... basically hand-controlled. So it's like a theremin for effects. They sold terribly. They sounded pretty terrible.
What? You're crazy. They sounded great. You should definitely buy that one for £100.
Yeah, they had the Air Effect. I think they had a whole range, right?
There was some sort of DJ one as well that had like scratch sounds on it and stuff like that.
Yeah, so some were effects. I think some were actual sounds. So, for example, you could have like... a phaser that had x-axis and y-axis
Jay's
control
just
over like phasing time.
Jay's just playing a video of the synth.
Sorry, sorry. Carry on. I'll stop.
Can I just say?
I could hear it in the background.
Could I just say that this Theremin MIDI controller, this sounds like we're doing an ad now because the background music. This Theremin MIDI controller. If you buy the kit. And you're willing to put it in your own box. Hang on, I'm just having a look. Oh no, if you buy the kit... okay, this pricing's a little confusing. If you buy the kit internals and you buy the kit box to put it in, $79.
Yeah.
Affordable.
That is an excellent price.
I'm into it.
Some really cool stuff in here.
Very much into this percolator 2-watt combo, this tube amp combo. So it's a single 8-inch speaker combo that ranges between $339 and $489 USDs, meaning you can buy this in kit form as well. And they say it's perfect for cigar box guitar and harmonicas, ideal for bedrooms and apartments, you know, or even a small gig, they say. But yes, it's got a single 6AF11 valve. And it's the image they've got of it here. It's like in this gorgeous, no Tolex, just like a really nice sort of walnutty wood and like a really simple brown grill on the front. But oh, it's so super retro. The handle on the top of it looks straight off of a kitchen cabinet. It's great. I'm really into this. It's like a sort of a weird, little... cool amplifier, and it looks like you can get it in head form as well and get the cabinet separate. Oh, these are really cool. These remind me of that little Greer amp. The perfectly cubed Greer amp.
Can I say that the little mini synth, if you're willing to buy the kit form and you don't want the power supply, $59.
I'm not willing to buy the kit form.
You want it? Okay, well, if you want it
ready to
pre-made.
Listen, Mark, what I want is I want to buy this synth ready to put on the shelf and never use again taking a picture of it for Instagram. That's what I want.
Do you want the 9-volt wall-wart power supply as well?
No, because I assume
it runs on batteries.
And also, probably because it's a US company, it probably wouldn't work on that anyway.
That is correct. $119.
That seems very reasonable.
Yeah, great fun.
And what's that in pounds? Like 300 quid or something?
Yeah, it's about $119. £119 even.
Yeah. But yeah, what a wicked little find. Zeppelin Design Labs. They are super cool. Matt Knight, this week you've had a chance to play on, and actually the rest of us did as well the other day, but the Thorpe FX The Dane.
Yes. Well, I mean, I talked about it a lot when I first got one, but I guess everyone else got to have a go on it, and we got to talk about it on Gear of the Year. It's wicked. I still love it. I mean, one of the best make gooder pedals I've ever tried, personally. It was quite interesting, I think, with us trying it, how different my playing style made it sound to, say, Jay's, for example. And I think it was actually a good example of how... I think it's a great example of how it's a pedal that varies quite a lot depending on what sort of player you are. It's very, very touch sensitive. So for me, who has the touch of a wizard compared to Jay, who has the touch of some sort of Goliath.
some sort of rock very, very monster.
Of the rock.
Of the rock. I tell you what, we watched a bit of that new Jumanji movie last night.
God.
Before the Eagles Cowboys game that we watched. We watched some of that new Jumanji movie, and actually it was pretty funny.
I heard it's actually real good.
It looked quite good. Sorry, Matt, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's fine. But yeah, I mean, like I said, we spoke about it at length about a month ago, and obviously it gets a mention next week. But it's a wicked pedal. I would advise anyone to really go and check it out.
Speaking of movies, as I was, which is a bit more interesting than guitars most of the time, I watched Dune for the first time yesterday.
Yeah.
Have you read the book?
I've not. I've got the book, okay. And I haven't read it yet. But yeah, I can't believe I'd never... The more the movie went on, the more I just thought, like, I can't believe I've never watched this before, because it's directed by David Lynch. It stars both Karl McLaughlin and Patrick Stewart. The rest of the cast are like fringe characters from Twin Peaks. Most of the music is done by Toto, and the music that isn't done by Toto is done by Brian Eno. It's in
and
space.
Sting's in there.
Sting's in it. It's in space.
In pants.
Sting. He's shirtless. Hmm. Not in pants. I mean, I'm assuming he's wearing pants as well.
He's in pants for some of it.
He does. But there is a scene where he's got pants on.
It's really? Like a big nappy.
Oh, okay. Hmm. And also had the... So it fulfilled the two main criteria I have for films, which is one...
Patrick Stewart.
Well, that was probably third. One is set in space or, you know, on a different world. And two, no love story. And there's a little bit of a love story, but it's fine. It's not really that important. Those are the two aspects that I look for. And this had that as well as all the other stuff. Oh. What a great film. Can't believe I've never seen it before.
Totally.
Yeah, a wonderful film.
Speaking of films, Gremlins 2 is a great film.
Speaking of sequels, I also watched Home Alone 2 yesterday.
Lost in New York.
I don't know if that's a good sequel.
Oh, so fun. Like, I don't really like comedies. I don't know if I've ever said this before. But I just laugh in the whole way through. It's so funny.
I think it says a lot about you when we try and put on like a nice highbrow comedy and you're like, nah, I don't like comedies, but Home Alone 2.
I also don't like Christmas movies.
The best sequel ever made is Predator 2.
Isn't that called Predators?
That's another alien.
Now we're at Christmas time, we can watch Jingle All The Way.
That is a great movie.
I tend to watch it most of the time anyway, but now I can get other people to watch it.
Matt's like midway through July, everyone's on the beach, Matt's at home watching Jingle All The Way.
Matt's birthday treat is watching Jingle All The Way.
It's
like,
such a great movie.
Oh, these cookies.
So boys, this week I bought a new bass.
Oh, that's not as good as Jingle All The Way.
Yeah, I bought a new bass. You guys already know. Of course you guys already know. Because after I sent the Guitar Nerds a picture of this particular bass and said, I'm thinking about buying this bass, when I next spoke to the shop about buying it, they were like, you probably need to buy it quick because Jay Cross gave us a call to... I can't believe you tried
Listen, I wouldn't have bought... I sent you a text as well saying... Are you going to buy this? Because if you're not, I'm going to buy this. And you didn't reply, which I thought was enough time I wouldn't have bought it without checking with you first. Right, okay, I wouldn't.
I would.
I asked for anyway. You should say what it is.
Yes, I have purchased a real 1969 precision bass. A very, very well loved, solidly gigged 1969 precision bass in Sunburst with a torque guard. Unfortunately, it's just 69s just after that point where they stopped using celluloid and started using acrylic for the torque guard. So they just didn't age. So where the rest of the body's like the Sunburst is really worn down. It's obviously there are loads of dings all over the place, loads of missing paintwork. But the plate itself still looks really new.
Or it is new and you've been mugged.
No, we took it off and had a butcher's. It looks... It's
when are you putting
wrecked.
Some EMGs in it?
Yeah. Yes,
I can't wait to put the Floyd on it. It's going
to
be great.
rare to find a P-Bass from that era that didn't go through that unfortunate bit in the 80s where people rooted out holes in the back of P-Basses to shove 9-volt.
Mate, get a Kayla Trem on
there. Yeah.
It really is an amazing looking bass. I mean, we've not tried it, obviously. You didn't trust us enough to bring it over for us to have a look at.
I would have,
but it really does look amazing. And it's the reason why I was so interested in getting it when you know you brought it up. And I would like to just reassure you, I wouldn't have bought it from underneath you. I only would have got it if you didn't want to take it. But the thing that really attracted me to it was just, I feel like we're really running out of time to get a vintage instrument like that. To get a 50, I mean, there's no way we'll get...
50 years
old. There's no way that any of us will be able to afford a 50s Fender or Gibson, which is what, you know...
Speak for yourself.
Okay, fine, all right, money bags. But like, you know, that six... I just feel like the time is running out to get a guitar of that era because, you know, everything is rocketing up in value and it doesn't seem to be slowing down.
Nope.
So, I think you did really, really well.
It's a shame, Joe, because Andy Baxter has a 59 P-Bass in mint condition at the moment for just, you know... 12,995. So,
yeah, I keep a constant eye on Andy Baxter bass.
I mean, this one is like actually mint. I
can't believe it. Listener, if you've never checked out the Andy Baxter website, I appreciate it's largely bass, but he actually does do some guitars as well. He seems to always find absolutely mint condition 50s and 60s.
I don't know how he does it.
Well, I assume he's not finding them.
Well, people are coming to him. He'll have
like a group of collectors.
Yeah.
Because that's what it'll be. And we were talking about this over the weekend because, Matt, you were talking about someone who you'd interacted with recently who reckoned that they had played basically every Gibson Les Paul from between the years of 58 and 60 that has ever made it into the UK.
Yeah. And he's had like, you know, good double figures.
Yeah.
It's just
the thing is that there's just a group of people who are involved in this. And well, yeah, I mean, a lot of these instruments just move around.
A couple of years ago, when I went to do some stuff at the Royal Albert Hall with Joe Bonamassa's bass player, at the time, I was standing outside with his tech and there was three obviously very big Joe Bonamassa fans standing outside talking to the tech that all knew Joe Bonamassa because they were all in this circle of vintage guitar buyers. And one of them was talking about how he'd bought the first ever Sunburst Les Paul out of the factory.
Wow.
And then another guy was talking about the 59 that he'd just bought. And then the other guy was like, oh yeah, I had that one. I think they basically what happens is they just go round in the same circle, but when it comes round to you again, you pay about double the money.
I also think it's like, you know, when someone's talking about a guitar and they're like, oh yeah, you know, I had a really good, like, you know, 90s Japanese telly, and you're like, oh yeah, I had one of those. In their case, like, the circle of guitars is smaller. So when they say, you say, oh, I had a really nice, 59 Les Paul Sunburst, they're like, yeah, I had that one as well.
But yeah, I tell you the thing, Joe, is whilst I was figuring out if I could afford to buy this 69p base, which I couldn't really, but I would have just made it work. I would have put it on my credit card and then just spent the next month selling stuff to try and like clear it.
Which is incidentally exactly what I've done.
Completely. What it did make me do is say, well, look, I couldn't get that, but what I do really want to do is get a really nice custom shop.
You want a custom shop? Yeah. Rather than a vintage guitar?
Well, I would love a vintage guitar and like a, obviously like a 50s or a 60s P bass would be amazing, but it's, as you found out.
Well, I was going to lead on. This is actually quite a good discussion point. Do you go custom shop or do you go vintage? Because to bring you in on it, listener, the 69, I got a little bit of a deal on it because it's not in very good condition on account.
I think it looks fine.
Oh no, it looks wonderful. It's got wonderful gig wear on it. Yeah. It's not that. It's that the neck is a little bit twisted. There's no relief left in the truss rod, and there's a little bit of a raise
that could be a problem.
There's a little bit of a raise towards the top end of the. Of the fretboard, and it looks like it's had at least two refrets. There's not much meat on the bone, as it were. The rosewood is very thin now. The amount left on the board itself. So it
sounds like you've got a great guitar.
Well, see, that's the thing is, can you find a really good giggable, usable instrument for a price that isn't like astronomical in comparison to what you can get from the custom shop, you know.
This is the thing. I think realistically, I would tell most people buy a new custom shop guitar and get it exactly the way you want it. Because if you're going to buy vintage, you're either buying a museum piece or you're buying a well played piece that you're going to gig with. You're always going to pay more for the vintage thing, really.
You should have told Joe this about 3 days ago.
Nah, I wanted him to let him make that vintage era all by himself. I've done it. Everyone will do it. I'm sure it's a great bass, though. I'm sure Joe probably didn't get blinded by a really plain-looking 72 standard Tele when he had possibly the best Esquire in the world.
Yeah, you're an absolute fool for that.
Oh, close.
I know, and that's why I will never... That's why I'll never buy a vintage instrument again.
I would still keep my eye out, and if anything came, I've still the dream is like a 59 or a 60 Les Paul Junior double cut. I'd still definitely like to get one of those and some sort of vintage P bass. But
what's crazy though, it's my Strat is now 30 years old.
What is your Strat? It's Japanese. Pink Paisley.
Yeah, I've got an 88 made in Japan Pink Paisley. You just think, well, it's not that far off from being 40 years and then 50 years old.
Yeah.
Just keep hold of that.
It's about my 10 instrument. 20 years time, I reckon.
Yeah, that'll go pretty damn quick, I'm sure.
But yeah. And also, I don't know how many Shell Pink bases they made in 59, so which obviously is the dream. So we'll have to see. But I was sort of moving some stuff around in my head, thinking like, oh, if I could get rid of that, and I could get rid of that, and I could probably do this, and I could probably afford that, and you know, then I'm not a million miles away from it. So I think time. I said it last year when I went to NAMM. I was going to spend some time in the custom shop section of the Fender booth, and like really play a few bits and pieces, because I think what I want is a 59 P bass. I'm sure that's what I want, but yeah,
you've got to be sure.
I've got to try a few. I mean, especially because what I'm getting will have like next to no resale value. so we'll have to see. But I don't know. But I'm really looking forward to seeing your bass, because I think the pictures looked amazing. And
I tell you what, if I was going to buy a bass, and this popped up on my sort of like photo memories on the iPhone, was that, and I can't remember the brand, I'm trying to bring it up, that like vintage style, like Epiphone bass that we played at Summer NAMM, Jay, that was in the TV yellow.
Oh, yeah.
$1,700.
Sarek? You were going to buy one, Joe?
Yeah, Sarek.
Sarek. Yeah.
They're still on my list of things that I probably will get.
I thought this was, firstly, you've had the last gigging bass you'll ever need to buy, and now you've got your vintage bass and you're thinking, what do I need next?
Well,
what I want to do is sell all the stuff that I've got and just have a couple of really, really nice things rather than having loads of pretty average stuff.
I would put 10 quid on that absolutely not happening.
Yeah.
Within the next... How old are you? 34 years. Yeah. I reckon age 68, you're still going to have... I've got this vintage 2014 Mexican Standard P-Bass. I picked it up in the year 90... Oh, no, that doesn't make sense.
It is weird to think, though, that at some point there are going to be like 50-year-old Mexican Standard Strats.
There'll probably be hundreds of them because there's so many of those.
Yeah,
and they're just indestructible.
It won't mean anything. Yeah. In 20 years, this it won't mean anything.
And all of them, people will still just want 50s and 60s and maybe at that point 70s. Maybe. And who knows, in 15 years' time, we might be at a point where...
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Pick up some 100 watt power amps are popular again. So, you know, maybe stuff in it, maybe 80s stuff will be popular.
Let's hope not.
A picture turned up this week on, I think it was on the Facebook group Ugly Guitars. Someone had posted a little cutout from an Epiphone magazine from the 80s. And the cutout was of four instruments that Epiphone introduced as prototypes that, as far as I can tell, and from sort of reading about these never actually made it into production. And they were four instruments designed in collaboration with Kurt Hendrick. Now, the listener, if you're not familiar with Kurt Hendrick, is quite an interesting story, and you should go and read up on it. There's an excellent bit about him and his life as a guitar builder on vintageguitar.com. Essentially, he made Billy Gibbons a custom built guitar. There were a couple of different body shapes he made, which were the transformer, the generator,
the catalyst.
Yeah, they were bonkers instruments. Often they were bent or curved in sort of lengthways, if that makes sense, as well as being sort of weird, sometimes melted, certainly not straight. Versions of sort of quite 80s-esque pointy guitars.
Some of the body designs, you know, at Christmas. You get those crackers with the little fish that's supposed to tell you your mood by putting it on your palm.
That, and it curls if you're happy. It curls if you're in love.
Yeah, if you're sensual.
Yeah.
Or just generally quite warm. But yeah, they sort of remind me of that. And for that reason, I really want one.
Yeah, they're great. Really interesting. He's a really interesting fella. He went to a luthier school in Texas, which he dropped out of halfway through, and started just making guitars off his own back. Had some luck setting his own company up and producing guitars. Worked with Schecter, making necks at one point. But yes, his most interesting set of guitars, I think, were the four that he made for Epiphone. The four prototypes were the Apollo, the Modern, the Futura, and the Comet, which are some of those are names that actually got reused. The Modern, of course,
it's the same body shape.
Yes, it is.
I think
yes,
it's exactly the Modern, the same body shape. I think it's just what he's done with the actual instrument itself is different to, I think, what Gibson ever.
Well, absolutely. He put Floyds on them for
a
start.
There weren't Floyds at the when the Fly V and Explorer were born.
that's a shame.
The Apollo is kind of a cartoon impression of a Flying V. Imagine a Flying V if it
was on the Simpsons.
Yeah, put on a little weight. It's the only way to describe
it.
I love it. I love his scratch plates. His scratch plates are always very. They don't look like they're on the right guitar. They're those weird sort of pawn shop 50s, very angular scratch plates.
All of these guitars look like they're from the Jetsons.
Yes, he's very much, his overall style is very much in that line. And of course, I think it was the Futura that got, they used that name later on in Gibson for a guitar, Mark, that you spoke about on the top five weirdest Gibson.
Futura is actually a original name for the Explorer.
Right.
So that's the original body shape. That kind of weird cut down Explorer.
Yeah.
And then they expanded that out to the Explorer. But yeah, I mean, they've used the Futura name on tons of stuff. They've used it on SGs and Les Pauls at one point they were going to put like, what made them futuristic? Was that when they had the Robo tuners?
I think there was the Les Paul is that the Future Tribute?
I actually did just make that as a model, I think. I'm sure they did.
Yeah, maybe there was a Les Paul Futura. I'm sure there was. I can't remember, but
no,
I'm sure.
I thought
it was one of the ones where it was like Blue Burst and it had a Sidewinder P90.
No, I think that is the Future Tribute.
Oh, no, you're right. Actually, Gibson Les Paul Futura demo was, they did one in Plum.
Yeah, that's what I thought there was. Plum. Yeah, yeah.
2014. Let's have a look. The Power of the Future. Get ready for the next stage.
Oh, this one.
Modern weight relief.
Mad weight relieving. Yeah.
Envelope pushing pickups. Turn up the heat with a 15 dB boost and a P90 Sidewinder and a Burst Bucker. Plus coil tap. Yes, had the first or second generation of robot tuners when it moved to Tronicle.
Sorry, I'd just like to point out that the headline here is The Future of Tuning.
I don't think so.
And it had those weird grips on the
I quite like those.
They were very weird. They were faded as well, if I remember right.
It looks like they also used Futura in the 80s as a rebrand of the Corvus.
Yes,
which was that
Corvus,
weird,
which was the guitar that you spoke about and that's what I thought. The Corvus was called the Futura.
No, it was the Corvus. I think it's a rebranding. But the Futura name comes from the first Explorers, basically, which is what these Epiphones are going back after.
Right,
it's that design again.
Well, the most interesting one in the four prototypes, I thought, was the Epiphone Comet, which is kind of a... Do you remember those square Dan Electro guitars or rectangular Dan Electro guitars?
It looks like a chopping board.
This looks like a slightly curved chopping board. Like,
what are you talking about? Chopping board's a Telecaster shape.
Unbelievable.
But this is like it's like a rectangular, slightly curved, completely rectangular triple mini humbucker guitar with a sort of Explorer style headstock and a Bigsby.
Yeah.
It's the most bonkers of any of the guitars, and it comes with a bolt-on maple neck as well.
Do you know what the weirdest thing about these guitars was for me? Was the logo. So it's not the regular Epiphone logo. It's like the Epiphone E in a kind of red badge with kind of wings coming off it. And I was like, where have I seen that before? And I'd seen it because they used it on the headstock of the Epiphone Les Paul Nuclear Crackle guitar, which was something that came out...
Sorry, the Nuclear Crackle?
Indeed. A series that came out in the early 2000s where they basically had crackle-finished Les Pauls. I think you could get a black and grey one and a red and yellow one.
Right, so they look like lava floors.
Yeah, kind of. Basically, they look like if the finish on a guitar had kind of like spread out and cracked. And weirdly, they use this same logo. So I don't know if it's something that was designed for these guitars and they used later, or whether it's something that is a historic Epiphone logo.
Yeah, I think it is, because weren't these used on that's the logo that you see on Wilshire's and Sheraton's.
I'm not sure.
Old ones.
I'm not sure it is.
And coronets and stuff like that.
I'm going to Google it.
I'm sure that's what you see on there. But yeah, I've just found one on here. There's one on Reverb at the moment that is from the year 2000. This Nuclear Crackle. Yeah, really.
I bet it's going for a great price and probably with some great service.
It's going for three. Okay.
We should get one.
It's going for, well, if you want to get this one, it's going for a great price of £323.64 plus a minuscule £8,111 shipping. So, you know, nice, appropriate price.
That sounds like quite expensive shipping.
Yeah, I mean, presumably someone is travelling with it in a first class flight.
I mean, the listing sold nearly 2 years ago, so maybe it's from the past. That's why the shipping is so...
That makes sense. Yeah. I imagine time travel to be in the region of £8,000.
Joe Branton.
Matt Knight.
You have failed to mention that GAC actually have a really cool guitar in secondhand right now.
Have I? What have we got in?
You've got, and actually, I would be dead tempted with this, a 1979 Gibson RD Artist with the Moog circuitry.
Oh, someone asked me when I was looking at the 69, one of the guys in the shop was like, you should get the RD Artist with the Moog circuitry. And I was like, ha ha ha, I thought he was making a joke. I didn't realise there was actually, Oh, that sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's a fully analog active electronic system designed by Bob Moog, basically, that they called, I think they called like the expansion set. And I think it's got a bunch of sustain stuff in it. I think it's got like a full low pass filter in it.
God, look at the volute on that headstock.
Yeah, that's well 70s.
Don't worry, it won't break this time. 5-piece neck. Is it 5-piece or is it 3-piece? I think it's a 3-piece on the description. It looks like a 5-piece to me. I think that's just the flame on it. But they were crazy. And the only one I've ever seen, the electronics didn't work. And actually, I saw that at GAC when I was working there. But they're really
maybe
crazy
it's the same
to see
one.
With the electronics.
Did someone come in and try and sell it to you, and you said no, sorry, the electronics don't work, and that same person has left it 5 years and gone, oh, that case isn't working anymore. I'm sure they won't know.
No, I wish. It was already on the wall. I remember. I think not long after I started working, that was the only one I'd ever seen. I was like, yeah, they are wicked though. If the electronics work in that, which I'm sure they do, that is an amazing guitar. Yeah. And not a lot of money, actually, at $18.99.
Oh, that is a great price. Do you know what else has come in recently that is incredibly unusual and super cool? The Gretsch G6120TB-DE Dwayne Eddy.
6120.
What I was just saying.
Yeah, 6120.
Yes.
Okay. He's saying it the cool guy way.
I was saying it the cool way. Dwayne Eddy, 6-string bass. It's a Gretsch.
What?
Yeah. That's right.
Oh, I'm just looking at it. That is mental.
It is a bass six, but it's a Gretsch bass six. So big bodied hollow body fitted with a Bigsby. So a Bigsby
on a
bass six. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for a pound less than £3,000.
And I bet the tuning is fantastic.
Well, I don't know. I mean, the thing was huge. It was almost as tall as me.
Wow. It's 30-inch scale length.
Yeah. A 30-inch scale length bass six.
I'm in.
With a Bigsby.
Oh, man,
come on.
That is awesome.
That is very cool.
Yeah. It's super cool. What a great bass. I'm going to do a video on it.
Did he ever play one? I don't know if he ever played something. I mean,
I would have thought so.
I would imagine. Yeah. If he's got his signature model of it, he possibly played it. Anyway, it's about time we should dive head first into some news. Matt Knight.
You don't have to put on the Matt Knight.
Epiphone have released a signature model.
I have. It's someone who hasn't had a lot of suit. Actually, no, they've had loads. It is an Epiphone limited edition Joe Bonamassa ES355. You know, just so he's building up the entire collection of guitars he probably has never played in the Epiphone version. Yeah, so this is a 355 limited for Joe Bonamassa, I think. Comes fitted with Probucker humbuckers,
gold Probucker humbuckers,
gold, yeah, all black, gold hardware,
gold Bixby,
B7,
gold,
yes, Bixby, B7, Bixby. Comes with a hand signed certificate of authenticity. Only 300 will be made and available, bizarrely enough, on Joe Bonamassa's own website.
This is unusual for a Joe Bonamassa Epiphone signature model. Joe Bonamassa tends to use his Epiphone signature models for weird finishes. You know, he had the gold Firebird 1. He had that Inverness green Les Paul. He had a weird Tele 335.
He's basically had everything. Just say a thing that has existed, and there's been a Joe Bonamassa.
But they've
version.
Always been interesting colours. The like you think about. I mean, I guess he even had that Tomato Burst.
What's
Tomato Super Burst Gibson?
What's
but,
yeah. Stupid is on the press release, which I'm guessing is like a standard press release, and then they change a few bits. They've been like, don't forget, it will be available in stores this month. Check an authorised Epiphone dealer to order one today, and it's like, but I can only buy it from joebonamassa.com.
Yeah.
That's an authorised Epiphone dealer.
I guess he is now. I mean, he is basically Epiphone now and Gibson. £999.
Well, dollars, but it's the same.
Yeah, probably the same. And it's basically a recreation of a guitar that Gibson Custom Shop built for him for one of his many, many live DVDs.
So these were... these were announced a little while ago, or at least they were shown. Maybe they weren't announced. Maybe they were just shown a little while ago. I think he maybe leaked them. Because if you remember, there's also, as well as the kind of standard one, there's also the one that he called, he like had a bit of a laugh with it, because it's got his signature inlaid in Mother of Pearl, or like Pearloid or whatever. In the fingerboard.
Oh yeah, I've seen him do that with Les Pauls.
And he's done that with this, and like he on his tweet about it, he said like, also available in the non-ego stroking version or something like that, which I thought was quite funny. But yeah, it's interesting that he's going down the route of selling these exclusively on his own website, because obviously he did that as well with the 59 twin.
Oh, really?
that he had made that Fender made.
I wondered where they went, because they talked about them in loads of videos, and I never saw one actually out in the wild.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they all went on his website. It's I'm just having a quick look on there now, seeing what's available. The 59 twin JB edition exclusively sold here. I also have it in my head that it is a it's like a high powered twin. I think it's really
it's based on, because I think, I mean, the great thing about Joe Bonamassa in one way is that he's buying all this gear and preserving the history of certain brands, because I think he's like the only person who's got a complete set of every tweed amp that Fender have ever made in condition.
Yeah, that is
like
pretty substantial.
He's got like, he calls it the mint tweed set, which is like nuts. But I mean, that, yeah, I think it's based off a high. There's a load of tweed Fender amps I never knew existed until I really heard him talk about tweed amps. But yeah, there was a twin and a high powered twin.
Can I just say, Jay's mouth is the widest I've ever seen it right now. I think
what's Jay seen? What have you found?
Joe Bonamassa's website.
My jaw literally dropped when I looked at this.
I've never seen you look like that before.
I know we've talked about this a couple of times in the past. You know he's got his signature amp baffle. You know about this?
Yeah, it's just some perspex.
Do you know how much it is?
No.
$399.
What? Does it say Joe Bonamassa on it?
That's less than I thought you were going to say.
I don't think it does. It must do somewhere.
It's just perspex. It's a sheet of perspex.
Oh, no,
you
it does.
You buy it from B&Q.
It's cleverly designed perspex.
It does have a signature
engraved
on it, really small, but JB4 by Clearsonic. That is a lot of money. I hadn't realised.
Ooh,
crikey.
Oh dear, not sure about
that. He also has a Palmer signature guitar speaker simulator. DI box. He's got a signature DI box.
Fine. He's right.
I mean, you know, fair enough. He's presumably he's got in touch, or this company have got in touch with, or, you know, he would have got in touch with them and gone like, can I have one of these? And they've gone, yeah, 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 we'll send it to you for free. How about that? And he's gone, well, look, how about this? Instead of you sending one for free, how about you make me a signature one, and then I'll buy a load, and then I'll sell them to my fans. I mean, the geezer obviously knows what he's doing.
I've got to say, though, the advert on his website for the banner ad that someone's put together for that twin is absolutely dreadful. it's like some sort of flash website from like 1996.
Yeah, it does look like
at home on spacejam.com.
Yeah, literally what I was about to say.
Space Jam vibes.
J Cross, Fender have released something else this week other than the American, what are they called?
American Performance. That was last week.
So yeah, there's another edition.
Yes. So this is the official launch of the second Flea signature jazz bass.
Now, the first one was very, very popular.
The first one was super popular and it was road-worn shell pink, Mexico-built jazz bass. Really, really fantastic.
And they've not changed much for this one, have they? They've changed pretty much the same.
I would say. Imagine changing literally everything. Oh, okay. And that's what's happened. So this apparently is more like what he uses live.
Well, the 60 jazz bass is what he used for Atoms for Peace. And
right,
And this is what he uses for Chili
Who
Peppers.
Who is it? Was that a band
that was his Thom Yorke band.
Oh, okay. Was Omar Rodriguez Lopez in that band?
No.
Was he in a band with Flea? Or am I making that up?
Flea was the bass player and trumpet player on the first Mars Volta album. Not the Mars Volta EP. Yes, before One Order Rep, because they had, what's her name? Eva Gardner was the very first bass player on the EP. Then Flea on D-Last
in the Comatorium. Really?
Eva Gardner had to leave just before they started recording the first album, right? So they got Flea in to record the first record. Yeah. And it's funny because obviously it's got some of the most famous Mars Volta songs on it because it was the most commercially
successful
album, I guess. And when I was talking to one older, loads of people were like, oh, I love that bass sound on like a couple of the tracks and record. And he's like, yeah, I didn't play on those. I didn't play on anything on the first record.
And I'll tell you who did play everything on the first record, and that is Flea. So the Flea jazz bass is unlike basically any jazz bass Fender has made, probably since like 1983.
Do you remember Flea's company before he was
Flea Bass?
The Flea Bass.
Yes. It also doesn't look like that in the slightest. So it's like a kind of sort of like modern, ultra modern, I guess, jazz bass. So it's got just a single humbucker, which is I think it was designed specifically for Flea, and it's got a Aguilar preamp in there, which powers it. So obviously it's all active and everything. Available in shell pink, still keeping that continuity, which is real nice, or like a weird grey colour.
I thought it was gold. I thought the other colour was a gold.
No, it's I can't remember what it's called. Let me just see what it says here. Shell. And
I don't think, is it shell pink?
It's satin shell pink or satin inca silver.
Yeah,
inca silver.
So that's the other colour. But yeah, so it's 12 to 16 inch radius. And yeah, it's just really, really weird. Really weird looking jazz bass.
I don't think it is that weird because if you...
You don't think it is
that
weird.
What I think is that they've basically taken the spec of his Modulus bass, which is the famous Red Hot Chili's bass.
The Modulus became the Flea bass because when he left Modulus and started his own company.
It didn't really become it, did it? He just was making a cheap bass that had a single humbucker.
Yeah.
No, they didn't even have a single humbucker. They had two humbuckers.
No, they were single humbucker. Originally Flea used to play Music Man Stingrays.
You're right. So it seems like what they've done for this is just basically take the concept of the Modulus and plop it on a jazz bass.
Right,
yeah.
I think they're cool.
I think they're great looking. And you know, Flea has an excellent bass tone, and the Modulus and the Flea basses were always a bit silly. So it's nice to have an instrument that can get that sort of sound that actually looks really nice. So
do we know what sort of money it is?
It's a Corona made, so it is about £1,500. Okay. That sort of money.
That looks cool. I'm into it.
I can't remember exactly how much it is, but so these were at Summon Am.
I remember seeing them there.
Yeah, yeah. We had a little play on them, and yeah, I mean, it sounded great. And personally, I'm more into the 60s Roadworn one, obviously, but it's really cool, really interesting, and cool to see something different coming from an artist.
I wonder if it will be as successful as the current model.
Well, I mean, it's twice the price, so it doesn't have to be as successful. No, it has to be half as successful.
Ah, yes, excellent. Mark Packham, tell us about Pedal Train's new super tiny space-saving solution that we didn't know we needed, but does look like a good idea.
Well, if we'd have known about it before Gear of the Year, I would have been throwing this into my hat. Into the hat.
Into my hat.
Into my own hat.
I'd have been throwing this into my hat.
You could throw it into your hat because it's quite small.
I'd throw it into my own hat because this would have been my Gear of the Year, hands down. This is the best thing that has been released this year.
This is the best thing, Hans Zimmer.
Pedal Train have announced the SST, Space Saving Tuner, which is basically a kind of inline tuner with no switching that has a very narrow build and has a very narrow display, but looks quite...
It is the width of a pen.
It is, and it's quite accurate. And the idea being that you put this on your pedal board, you can hide all the cables underneath the pedal board, and you've got a little readout of your tuning always going when you're playing guitar. So not really ideal for live, unless you...
Well, most people are going to have an expression pedal that they can just...
I don't think most people have an expression pedal.
Yeah, I think most people have an expression pedal on their board.
No, they don't. What are you talking about?
Who does it? Matt, do you have an expression pedal on your board?
I do, but I think this is aimed at people who have got like a Pedal Train Nano. This is aimed at a Mark Packham.
Exactly that. You know who's got a Pedal Train Nano who is looking to free up some space on their board? Me. So what I think I'll do is get one of these and take off the TU2. Sorry, Matty. That can become my live tuner. And put this on the pedal board because it means... Like, I'm desperate for a space for one more pedal right now. I've really got into that Ibanez Tube Screamer Mini, and I want to put that on the board. So this could slot nicely on the board next to that. And, it means I'll still get the tuner and I get the extra pedal space. They're not a huge amount of money. They are £55 at retail, which seems
it's
a
the
little
same price
expensive.
As, like, a...
Yeah,
a,
it does seem quite expensive.
TE3.
Well, if you consider that the TC Electronic Polyclip is now only like £35.
Yeah, but you can't play a gig with a clip-on tuner.
You roll your volume off to tune.
Oh yeah, but also you just look like a Wally.
I mean, that was more my issue.
Oh, I see. Yes, yeah. Oh, you would look like a Wally. Yes.
So the idea basically is that this tuner is thinner than two patch cable ends. So the idea is that you slot it in between two pedals in the space where the patch cables are.
But then the patch cables are going to cover up the readout.
No, they're not, because you put it lower down on the board, closer to you on the board.
Well, in the image that they've provided,
yeah, that image,
the patch cable is literally obscuring.
Move
the...
to the second image.
Yeah, that first one is a bit rubbish. That's much better. This would be ideal for me because, like I said, I have got a little mini pedal that I want to squeeze on the board. I don't have any room at all right now. So if I take off the TU2, I will have room, and this will still allow me to have tuning capabilities. So
swag.
Yes, this and a new power supply, my little board is going to be up and running. It's going to be fantastic.
I really like this. I think this is a very neat idea.
Yeah.
My only issue with it is
it's not pink.
No. Now you mentioned it, but no. The issue I've got with it is there's no muting functionality. That's something that I've never understood.
It's meant for home though.
Yeah, I don't think it is. I think it's just meant for small boards.
Yeah, but I mean. It's meant for home.
Yeah, I suppose. I've never understood people who have their tuner going the whole time without it being like a TU3 or whatever, not having it in the mute output.
Right.
Like a friend of mine always does it, and
mine's
whenever
on
I see
the time.
I just don't understand it.
But then I just use the expression pedal. Just. Not that off because I run it into the tuner.
Mate, if you're gonna knock it off, why don't the thing that you knock off?
Why don't you just mute it?
Yeah.
Well, because it's sort of hidden up top. It's much more convenient to just hit my expression pedal.
I think you've got a very niche setup in that case.
Expression pedals normally have tuner outs for exactly this purpose.
Yeah, I just think it's weird
using an expression pedal as a mute.
Yeah, because I mean, the thing that you've got to bear in mind is like what the longest you could possibly be out of tune for is, well, I mean, how long's the average song? 59 seconds?
Yeah,
so I mean, the absolute maximum amount of time that you could be out of tune for is 58 seconds. So just get to the end of the song, say, thanks very much, take a swig of your beer, mute the tune, have a
but
talk,
the tune is on the
and
top
then play
tier, which
play
is
the second
tier.
Song, which is probably also your last song, because, you know, you only played two songs, punk bands, and then you've done.
Right, okay. Excellent advice from Jay Cross. But that is it from us.
That is it for us.
I'm so hungover. Right, that is it for a year from us here.
Oh, yeah, well, wait to end
Guitar
it.
Fantastic.
I'm so out. I'm out. Right, but we will be continuing over on the Patreon episode of the
And
Guitar
also
Nerds
then five
podcast.
More Patreon episodes.
And then five more
Not
Patreon
episodes.
Well,
five more
no,
episodes.
Sorry,
five more
Gear of the Year episodes. Yeah, yeah. Are we going to do Patreon during the off-season?
We probably will, yeah. I'll probably do a little bit of ASMR.
We'll do something. Yeah, we'll knock something up.
Yeah, it'll be great. Yeah, anyway, yes, we'll be over on the Patreon, where for as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular episode ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, plus access to all our bonus features and so forth. $10 a month, however, makes you one of our executive backers, getting you access to all of that guff, plus the prestigious honour of having your name read out in one breath by me.
Wait.
We've got more. There's more people as
Wait,
well.
There's at least one more this week.
Yeah.
What's the name of that company?
Zeppelin Design Labs. I knew exactly. You gave me a little cheeky look like, can I play the music?
I don't get... Why can't I find
it? At this point, I haven't slept for 24 hours and I have a sore throat.
You told us that you slept for 2 hours.
Oh, I did sleep for 2 hours.
And you don't
right.
smell that bad, because if you'd smelled that bad, I would have made you go and shower.
Yeah, we just wouldn't let you in.
Oh, I really want a shower.
When I woke up this morning, the electricity had run out, and so luckily I had topped it up yesterday. I just hadn't plugged it in, hadn't put the key in.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh no, it wasn't this one. That's the Quaver.
Okay, I'm going to start reading the Patreon backers' names.
Joe,
he's got a little bit of music lined up, and he wants to play.
Let's get the music and dance synth. Here we go.
I don't know if I don't make it on the last podcast of the year.
Well, then that's it. You're off the podcast forever, and I have to come back.
No, I get to host it.
Jay's in charge.
It should be
the
Jay's
podcast
turn
is next. Just the podcast just over forever.
Yeah, this is our last ever episode. Sorry, guys.
It's do or die.
Right, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Andrew Good, Duncan Watson, Adrian Day, Ethan Jebediah Bartier, Ken Sayers, Matthew King, Stephen Conrady, Gordon G. Richard III, Marin Peters, Sean Arbel, Christopher Wolfman, Cuthbert Cern, Robert Cousins, Rob Gruhl, Scott Appleton, Tucker Abaddon, Ernie Cooper, Nate Nagel, Ross Edwards, Christoph Rapsis, Robbie Cuttergrad, Matt Roberts, Steve Lee, Emily James Baker, Ryan McDermott, Juan Correa, Blake White, and Aaron Sherman, Jake Corey, Matt Bellamy, Martin Cliff, Scott Kennedy, Christopher Lawson, Robin Smith, Hans Arm, Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Rob Dordrick, Steve Michael, Mark Cross, Carlos Manta, Andy McKenzie, Brad Bates, Blair Toms, Laurie Anderson, Paul Corrigan, Will Clare, Moo Gravett, Bill Thompson, Colin Anderson.
That was almost it. I reckon one more and you're done. One more and you're done. So if you're feeling festive or you need someone to get you a present over Christmas, get them to get you a Patreon subscription, because Joe is almost done. Like, you're in trouble.
I'm going to pass out on air. Well, there you go. You can also follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Guitar Nerds, or on YouTube at Guitar Nerds Videos. You can even visit our website, guitarnerds.net, where all of our channels are displayed. You can even purchase Guitar Nerds merchandise and become a true member of the club. That's it from us for this year.
No,
we'll
it's
catch
not.
You on the flips. Oh, that's year, it next for week. Us for this year for the regular podcast.
No, it's not.
Yeah, it is.
For the regular podcast.
Oh, okay.
Because it's GOTY right. after this.
Okay. This is kind of like a bit of a memento thing, isn't it? Where what's happening now isn't going to be the last thing that the people hear.
Yeah. But it is the last thing that we're doing.
No, it's not, because we're about to do a Patreon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Anyway, join us for that on Patreon. Farewell.
Bye.
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 Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
it. Coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.